Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
You're writing checks your body can't cash. That's right. I'm talking about Top Gun Maverick. In 1969, the United States Navy created Fighter Weapons School, but they call it Top Gun. Oh, man, it's such a good movie. It's so good, it made me realize why CGI, computer-generated images, are so bad, even though they were so good at one point. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology. We talk about defending the Catholic faith. But on Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about, because it is free-for-all Friday. Anything I want to talk about. And so I want to talk about this because I went and saw Top Gun Maverick, and it was just such a good movie. And I have, you know, it's kind of sad, actually. I can't remember the last time I went to the theaters to see a non-Marvel movie, just because there haven't been a lot of movies that I thought were really interesting or worth going out and seeing. I know they had the pandemic, so that shut down movie theaters for a while. I remember going with a friend to see Jurassic World, which we will talk about. And Laura and I have, it's all a blur with children. I remember the two of us, for her birthday, we went to see Guardians of the Galaxy in theaters. I remember that being very expensive, and somebody brought a baby to the theater, and then thankfully management escorted them out. I'm sorry, I'm very tolerant of babies and small children. They're great. I'm pro-life, I have to be. But come on, for those of us who paid to get a sitter to go out to a movie, you can't bring your baby to a PG-13 or an R-rated movie because you don't have a sitter. I'm sorry, it's not fair to everybody else, all right? Maybe if they stay asleep, but the second they start crying, you lost your privilege to be there, okay? So movies. I haven't been out to them in a while, and a lot of the ones I did see were Marvel films, and Marvel films are fine. They're good. I enjoy them. But they're kind of predictable. It's like comfort food for cinema. You know it'll be good, but it's not like amazing. And the amazing Marvel films are like Avengers Endgame, where it took 10 years to build up to that amazing thing. So it's not entirely fair. But just for a movie on its own to be really, really good, it's kind of sad we haven't seen that very much. But Top Gun Maverick was a completely different story. This is a movie that has been a long time in the making. So you think about the original Top Gun, for example, with Tom Cruise. And that came out in 1986. All right. So we're almost 40 years later. Say 96, 06, 2016. Yeah, it's almost 40 years later that we get a sequel to Top Gun. And Top Gun is just an awesome film. Him, Val Kilmer, Ice Man. There's so many quotable lines, great action. And Top Gun Maverick really improves on it. And what made it so fun to watch was that it was real. There's a little video at the beginning of the film when you see it in theaters where Tom Cruise says, "Thank you for coming to see the film. We made it for you. These are real F-18s. They did this real. They did a little CGI, a little bit here and there for stuff you know, it would be too dangerous with people, like the plane crashing probably or different effects. But when you see these F-18s flying, the actors in the film are in these planes. Tom Cruise is in these jets, and they're really flying around, and they're doing these maneuvers, and it feels real. Like my heart was pounding during some of the dogfighting scenes, and I hadn't felt that way in a movie in a really long time. Because normally when I watch films, I mean, they're entertaining, they're exciting, but I know deep down it's not real. Like with Marvel films, the actors are all in a giant warehouse surrounded by green screens. And it's just not real. Now Marvel does a good job with CGI. They do a good job. It's not bad CGI. But deep down, you know it's not real. And so you can't have that feel with it. But watching Top Gun Maverick, it was just so fun to see, you know, the aerial combat, the jets. They throw a lot of sound into the base. It's a movie that was definitely made to be seen in theaters. I don't even know if it's still in theaters now. This episode should be debuting, I think, August, hopefully. So maybe it's still out there. I remember they had Titanic in movie theaters. It felt like it was in movies theaters for like 2 years, right? If you worked in the movies and Titanic was out and other films. So it was a great film. I recommend it. But what I want to talk about is CGI computer-generated images. Because, yeah, what made it so great was that they were using live practical effects and stunts, real F-18s, that I could see another movie, if they were doing it on the cheap, Top Gun 2, and Tom Cruise doesn't sign on, right? It's just a sequel. You know those sequels where they don't get the original actors, they manage to get the rights to the film, and they go forward with it? Where you would just have jets flying around in the sky that someone had computer animated, interspersed with cuts of someone sitting in a real cockpit, but they're not going anywhere because the cockpit is green screened to have stuff flying around them. And you could make it look decent enough, but in the back of your mind, as you're watching it, you would say, oh yeah, that's, you wouldn't feel like you're immersed because it wouldn't be real. This movie, I mean, Top Gun Maverick took several years to come out in the making. It's a movie people thought wouldn't actually get made. I remember when I was at Comic-Con several years ago, nerd alert, I was at the comic book convention in San Diego, Comic-Con. I was at Hall H, the big hall, 5,000 people in the hall. We were at the Terminator panel, awful Terminator movie, Genesis, I think it was, Terminator Genesis. And Linda Hamilton was there. I thought that's the biggest star I would see, Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger comes out. I'm like, oh man, it's Arnie, awesome. And then he asked to do the preview for Terminator Genesis. He says, play the clip, do it now. Then they walk off stage. Then Conan O'Brien walks out on stage. Late night comic Conan O'Brien's all tall and gangly. He says, listen, nerds, you're about to see the biggest movie star of your lives. And then this short guy walks out behind him. And it's Tom Cruise on stage. And everyone just starts cheering and going crazy. And he said, and then he played the trailer for Top Gun Maverick, which was, that was back in 2019 before the pandemic. All right, so awesome movie. But let's talk about CGI. Computer-generated images, these things have been used in films going way back. You can find early precursors to this in the 1958 Alfred Hitchcock film Vertigo, which uses weird psychedelic animation at the beginning, but it's not important for the plot necessarily. Pixar is really where it took off. So in 1985 is a film called Young Sherlock Holmes, and there's a scene where a knight comes to life and fights people, and the knight comes to life, he's in a stained glass window, and then he comes to life and fight, you know, fights and is in the film. And this sequence, John Lasseter was one of the major players behind this sequence in that film. He went on to do Pixar. And so this is one of the first polygonal CGI characters in film, Young Sherlock Holmes, 1985. So from there, where CGI really started to use it, we do see this in Tron, I should say. I should go back before Young Sherlock Holmes. CGI was used a lot in the movie Tron. And Tron, they could get away with it. You know, we talk about bad CGI now. You know, in Tron, it's about being stuck inside of a computer. So things can look weird or not necessarily realistic. And Tron is a classic movie. That's definitely a good one there. Westworld back in 1973 also used it. But for me, I feel like where CGI really took off for its potential is the movie Toy Story, okay? In 1995. It is really amazing to me how they were able to create that movie still stands the test of time. 1995 Toy Story. When I saw that movie, I was 10 years old, loved it. My kids have seen that movie since they're like five, and they love that film. And it's amazing how it, you know, it doesn't look bad. It looks good using these computer graphics on basically like a Windows processor, the computers that were used to make this. But why is Toy Story good? Why is it a good use of CGI? And the reason Toy Story is a good use of CGI is because it focuses on non-human characters, okay? One of the biggest complaints about CGI, you look in films like The Mummy 2, The Mummy Returns. In there's a scene where The Rock, The Rock plays this character, the Scorpion King, and he's like resurrected at the end of the film, and he's a scorpion monster with The Rock's face. It looks just terrible. And one reason CGI can handle skin looking bad, people look like they're plastic, because CGI can make your skin look too immaculate and it's not real. So you lose the texturing that's involved. Even when they try to do it in Rogue One, and they did it really good, they tried really hard with Princess Leia and Grand Moff Tarkin to create these CGI humans. It's very, very hard because computers want to make things perfect and human beings just aren't. We have all these tiny microscopic imperfections in the skin that are just hard for computers to model. So Toy Story works because the film, the humans in the film, like Andy, you never see Andy's mom, barely. You barely see Andy. He hops in, then he leaves, and the toys only come to life when he's not around. So that gives a good excuse for Andy to not be around in the shots. And so it focuses on the toys. So the toys can look like plastic. The skin on the toys can look like plastic because they're made with plastic. It doesn't look weird. Like, oh, it looks like a toy. And so you're willing to buy into it. The human character you see the most in Toy Story is Sid, the kid that lives across from Andy who likes to blow up his toys. I always hate that he's portrayed as a villain because, you know, he doesn't know the toys are alive. He doesn't know that. He's not a bad kid. I mean, he does seem kind of creepy. He's got the skull shirt. He has, you know, the darkened room and all this other stuff. And so he's the only human character that people see a lot is Sid. And that works because he looks kind of creepy looking. But here's the thing. Any human being that you try to model with CGI is going to look kind of creepy looking. That's what you get in things like the Polar Express, the film with Tom Hanks, where it tries to bring the child book Polar Express to life. Everyone looks a little lifeless. It's like early 2000s CGI. And it's not quite right. It falls into something that is called the uncanny valley. So this is something where if you look at Wally and you say, how human does he look from 1 to 10? A 2. He's got eyes, you know, little eyebrows, but he's cute, right? You go forward, the robot from Short Circuit, other androids, 6, 7, you know, they look human. As, you know, they get more and more human, your appreciation of them, oh, that's really cool, looks human, that's really neat. And then if it looked exactly like a human being at a 10, you really like it. But on the scale, when a robot or an animation of a human only looks 95% human, suddenly, whereas let's say it looked 80% human, you could still like it a lot. But when it looks 95% human, it drops down into the discomfort zone. We really, really don't like it. It creeps us out. That's called the uncanny valley. And there's different hypotheses for why that is. One reason is that as humans, we evolved to spot when other humans are sick or not doing well. And so if they don't look healthy, we stay away from them. And so a robot that looks 95% human closely resembles maybe a sick human that isn't looking well. We naturally want to stay away from them. So Toy Story works that Sid is kind of in the uncanny valley. He's creepy looking. But that's okay because... you know, it's he's the villain, so we don't mind that. Animating other Pixar things where they animate humans, they do that well with Incredibles. So in the movie The Incredibles, it's drawn in a cartoon. It's drawn with cartoonish style, so the characters are not drawn with exact human proportions. So it's more like an animated film in that respect. You're not trying to exactly duplicate a human being with CGI, so it doesn't creep you out. But when people try to reproduce human beings or try to put human beings into the background and try to put other things in there that's not there, it ends up falling apart. There's a famous scene in King Kong, the movie with Jack Black and Adrian Brody, where all the characters are running in a dinosaur stampede and it looks totally fake. And you see this in CGI, where CGI is bad. You'll see that there's the computer image and the actors, and it's very clear there is no real thing there. You see this a bad CGI, that they're pretending there's something there, but the compositing is wrong. So in the scene where Jack Black is running with the dinosaurs, his hat is still lit up, even when he's running under a dinosaur, when he should be in a shadow. Now, you don't notice that when you're watching the film. It's all happening too fast. But your brain knows something is not quite right, and it annoys you. And so your brain's pretty good about that, and that's why it makes you mad. Other times, you can just tell it's fake. You can't even articulate it, but if you sat for a minute, you'd say, oh, well, I know that's a fake CGI in there because usually a lot, 9 times out of 10, it's lighting. That you just can't get the lighting to work right, or it's bad green screen. That's why in The Mandalorian for Star Wars, what they have started to play with are light screens. So instead of having a character stand in front of a green screen, they stand in front of a projected background of what they would normally put in with a green screen. And it works because it creates natural ambient light that you normally would have to fill in or you would get wrong as an animator. And so it makes it seem at least a little bit more real. But here's the ultimate problem with it. CGI was bad because when it was first created, it was just meant to be like salt, right? Add a little bit to make it good. The first Jurassic Park is one of my favorite movies. It is a blockbuster. Jurassic Park was the definition of a summer blockbuster. But what made it so great was that the CGI was restrained. You don't even get to see the CGI dinosaurs until like 20 minutes into the movie. They pull in, and the first shot is not even the CGI. It shows the characters' faces looking at the dinosaurs, and they're just amazed. And it builds that suspense. That's Steven Spielberg doing it right. And then it cuts to the dinosaurs, and there's a faraway shot of them at a lake, and they're walking, and it shows a Brachiosaurus, and the camera is actually on the ground level, tilted up. With the actors in the foreground to really give the sense this dinosaur is real, but it doesn't linger on it. And then when we do dinosaur effects in the rest of the film, like the Triceratops, that's a live action audio animatronic, they use audio animatronics. The T-Rex is an audio animatronic. And they use real, I love puppets. More puppets in films. Puppet rights, okay? You can tell when it exists in time and space. It's real. You should have that. And so putting that out there, there's a few scenes where they use CGI. Like there's one scene where the girl falls through a vent and she's hanging and a velociraptor is about to grab her and she looks up, but it was actually a stunt double. And so in the film, they use CGI in that brief second that the stunt double looked up to put her face on. And it's so fast, you can't even notice. So that's what CGI is good for. But CGI, even modern CGI, has a lot of limitations. It has a hard time with skin, as I said before. It has a hard time with human movements. I think there's in one of the Blade movies, you see Blade fighting these other vampires, and they're moving around. They're totally spastic, and they're moving around like crazy people. It has a hard time with human movement a lot. Two other things, water and fire. CGI has a hard time with water and fire because those are complex interactions of chemicals. Very hard because the computers want to do it with a systematic process and water and fire can get kind of chaotic. You just can't quite get it right. So that's why it works better in animation. Like Moana is beautiful because it's not real water. It's animated water. So it just has a hard time with that. But I do miss when Jurassic Park where CGI was used to accentuate things rather than to try to bring it up more. Oh, I do want to leave you with one thing, though, about Top Gun Maverick. I forgot to say that you want to have CGI, that should accentuate, not be the main element of storytelling. But what also I was fun about watching Top Gun Maverick, so I guess diversion, Free Fall Friday, talk about what I want, is the plot of Top Gun Maverick is basically the same as Star Wars. So in Top Gun Maverick, they call back elite pilots. They have to do a bombing run where they have to fly through a canyon to avoid surface-to-air missiles. They fly through a canyon, and then they have to hit a target only 3 meters wide, two bombing runs to destroy this underground nuclear facility, okay? Fly through a canyon, hit a target that's very small. You get one shot at this, or else we're done for. Sound familiar? It should, because that's the trench run in Star Wars A New Hope from 1977, right? You have to destroy the Death Star. The only way we can do that is you have to fly through this narrow trench to avoid the surface cannons, and then you have to hit a target that is 2 meters wide. Nobody can hit that, not even a computer. I used to hit Womp Rats in my T-16 back home. They're no bigger than 2 meters. Shut up, Luke. But so that was in Star Wars. But here's what's funny. Star Wars, that idea was probably taken from an older movie called The Dam Busters. It was a 1955 World War II film, okay? And so this is based on real exploits in World War II. In The Dam Busters, the British Royal Air Force has to destroy a Nazi dam. And so in order to destroy the dam, you have to get the bomb on. I can't remember the exact elements involved, but I do know if you tried to drop the bomb directly on the dam, it wouldn't work. If you tried to fly high enough to do that or get over it, you get shot down by the guns, by anti-aircraft weapons. If you try to launch a torpedo drop from a plane to fly at the dam, it would be stopped by torpedo nets. So this is a real thing that happens. So what do you do to destroy the dam? Well, you fly low towards the dam to avoid the anti-aircraft guns, and you drop your bomb at the exact right moment. And when you do that, the bomb will skip across the lake that the dam is holding back. It'll skip across the dam and go over the torpedo net and then hit the dam and blow it up. And so you're flying low to avoid fire, and you have to drop your payload at the exact moment to get the enemy's vulnerable point. So I'm going to play a clip for you now that compares the trench run from Star Wars with the dam run from the Dam Busters. And even the dialogue is very similar here. So let me play that now.
Look at the size of that thing.
My goodness, it's big, isn't it? Can we really break that?
I'm going to cut across the axis and try and draw their fire.
I'll fly across the dam as you make your run and try and draw the flag off you. Okay, thanks, leader.
This is Gold Leader. We're starting our attack run.
I'm going into attack.
How many guns do you think, Gold 5?
Say about 20 guns, some on the surface, some on the towers.
How many guns do you think there are, Trevor?
I say there's about 10 guns. Some in the field and some in the tower.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you guys so much. This is a lot of fun to share this Free For All Friday with you. I love sharing Free For All Friday with you guys. It's always a treat. Also, to let you know, I'm going to be off next week, taking a little bit of vacation time. That's always a good thing to do. It's also my wife's birthday next week, so say a little prayer for Laura. Wish her a happy birthday if you see her, or I don't know, you can just, you know, send your thoughts and prayers. I don't know. So it's my wife's birthday next week. Time to go, little vacation, a week off. But I will be back on the Feast of the Assumption. Have some great episodes I want to share with you then. But thank you guys so much, and I hope that you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.